So in chapter 19, 1 Samuel chapter 19, last time we left our buddy Saul, and he stripped off his clothes also and prophesied before Samuel in like manner and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Wherefore they say, is Saul also among the prophets? So we got Saul lying down naked prophesying. And God graciously, I think, you know, the way I would look at this is that God is reminding him of who he is and knocking him down a peg, which is so important. I'm not coming off just some big humiliating thing that got me thinking about this. Praise God. I don't like to be humiliated. It's the best thing in the world when we start to get full of ourselves. But I'm married, so it doesn't it doesn't happen all the time. If she senses that I'm starting to, you know, pride up and start getting all full of myself, she knows how to knock me down a peg, which is a good thing. I mean, hopefully a spouse is, she's less likely. I think I have that in my repertoire. If I saw it happening in her, I think I could do that too. But it's just less likely. She's not given to, you know, pride, like I'm given to pride sometimes. So it was a good thing. It was a good thing that he got, and I think God's reminding him, he's going to try to kill David for the next few chapters. They're very colorful chapters. They're not really fun to read. It's like when you love somebody and you see God taking them through some really tough times. Why does God do that? He is growing us. There are things that are happening in our life. And there's much scripture on this. You know, we're supposed to count it all joy when we enter into these various trials. When I'm watching one of you do, I don't joy in that. I mean, I just barely do when I'm going through. But I'm very concerned about you. I'm thinking, oh, wow, I'm hoping that they'll do okay in this situation. And I'm very concerned. And so it's like when you see somebody going through a really tough time and you care about them. So that's kind of, but it's colorful because David is being built by God into a king. He's a shepherd boy. He's an Ophim king. And God is taking him and he's stripping away what? His wife, his friendship with Jonathan, his family, his job, his leadership in the army, his mentor. He goes to Saul, Samuel, and that's a good thing, but he's not going to have access to Samuel much longer. And God just stripping him down, so it's just him and just God. And we're going to find out that's, one, a good thing, two, a necessary thing. And when we finally get there, he's really all you needed all along. Now, the blessings he gives of a spouse or friends or family or a close-knit group or a church family. These are wonderful things, and he's happy to do that. But at the end of the day, what we need is Jesus Christ. Okay, well, I'm getting off the track a little bit. Okay, chapter 20. But I want us to understand that going forward. That's the focus. And David fled from Naoth and Ramah and came and said before Jonathan, what have I done? What is mine iniquity? And what is my sin before thy father? He seeketh my life. And he said unto him, this is to say, Jonathan said to David, God forbid, thou shalt not die. Behold, my father will do nothing, either great or small, but that he will show it to me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so. So me and Dad, we got this thing cooking. We got a good relationship. He'd tell me, don't you know that, David? You remember when in chapter 19, the beginning, Jonathan intervenes on David's behalf and sews up that relationship, fragile as it was, but got David and Saul back together. And David and Saul swore that he wouldn't take David's life. He swore by Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh that he would not take David's life. And so Jonathan, thinking, well, I got an oath. He doesn't know about the last episode, perhaps, but he's, so I don't think Jonathan's duplicitous or anything like this. He just doesn't know what's going on, and David's saying, "Yeah, you don't." And David sware, moreover, and said, Thy father certainly knoweth that I had found grace in thine eyes. And he said, Let not Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death. Now, one way that's not true at all. David is 10 foot tall and bulletproof, until which time God says, okay, that was your step, come on home. We don't perceive it that way, but we should. And then the other way of thinking about this, well, of course he's one step away from death. Who isn't? Our next breath, Scripture tells us, is in God's hand. You remember Daniel said that to Belshazzar when he was brought in to interpret the handwriting on the wall. Your next breath is in God's hands. You didn't acknowledge him at all. And he pronounces the judgment, etc., etc. Well, that was true of Belshazzar. And you and me. Our next breath we're all one step away from death. So what are we going to do? Cower and never get out of bed. Just draw the covers up. The boogeyman's going to get us, right? Live life to the full. I look at it like 10 foot tall and bulletproof. I'm not going anywhere until God says, oh, no, you are. It's your time. Come on up. Then what are you going to do? Now, take care of yourself, eat right, exercise, get plenty of sleep. I'm not saying anything like that, but at the end of the day, we'll all die on time. Oh. Then said Jonathan to David, what soul thy soul desireth, I will do it, I will even do it for thee. Hey, what do you want me to do? Okay. David said to Jonathan, behold, tomorrow is a new moon. I should not fail to sit with the king at meat. But let me go, that I may have myself in the field unto the third day at even. Yes, third day. If you want to make something of that, you probably should. If thy father at all miss me, then say, David earnestly asked leave of me that he might run to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the family. If he say thus, it is well, thy servant shall have peace. But if he be very wroth, then be sure that evil is determined by him. So this is the fleece they set out. And David is asking Jonathan to lie for him. He's taking advantage of their friendship. Say, well, it's not lying because it's for a good purpose. How about, hey, David is afraid to come to dinner with you, king. You keep trying to pin him to the wall with a javelin. I don't know, maybe a little truth. Yeah, that was kind of heavy-handed of me. Tell him it's okay, I'm over it now. I'm not going to do that anymore. You know what I mean? But he's asking him to lie, and I think that's a little bit dicey right there. Therefore thou shalt deal kindly with thy servant, for thou hast brought thy servant into a covenant of the Lord with thee. Notwithstanding, if there be in me iniquity, slay me thyself, for why shouldst thou bring me to thy father? And Jonathan said, far be it from thee, for I know certainly that evil was determined by my father to come upon thee. Then would I not tell it thee? Hey, Dave, we got something cooking here. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to lie for you, but I'm not going to lie to you. If I knew my dad was trying to kill you, I'd tell you my dad was trying to kill you. Then said David to Jonathan, who shall tell me? Or what is thy father's? What if thy father answer thee roughly? And Jonathan said unto David, come and let us go out into the field. And they went out, both of them, into the field. And Jonathan said unto David, O Lord God of Israel, when I have sounded my father about tomorrow any time, or the third day, and behold, if there be good toward David, and I then send not unto thee and show it thee, the Lord do so, and much more to Jonathan. But if it please my father to do thee evil, then I will show it thee, and send thee away, that thou mayest go in peace, and the Lord be with thee. As he hath been with my father, past tense, and thou shalt not only while yet I live, show me the kindness of the Lord, that I die not. But also thou shalt not cut off thy kindness from my house forever. So this covenant they have extends to the family as well. David's going to make good on that, but that's a story for another time. No, not when the Lord hath cut off the enemies of David, everyone from the face of the earth. Jonathan knows what's going to happen. David's going to become king. And Jonathan's saying, don't slay me because I'm not going to be trying to assassinate you to become number one. Two, I want you to treat my family, my posterity well as well. In some of these situations when someone became king, they killed all the royal seed. Why? Well, we don't want any uprisings or anything like that. Altogether wrong, altogether ungodly, but some people did it. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord even require it at the hand of David's enemies. And Jonathan caused David to swear again because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. They just have a beautiful, wonderful friendship. It saddens me that people try to make this into an ungodly, let's not go there type of thing, but there's no hint of that anywhere in Scripture. Then Jonathan said to David, tomorrow is a new moon. Thou shalt be missed, because thy seat will be empty. And when thou hast stayed 3 days, then thou shalt go down quickly and come to the place where thou didst hide thyself when the business was in hand, and shall remain by the stone Ezel. And I will shoot 3 arrows on the side thereof, as though I shot at a mark. And behold, I will send a lad, saying, go find out the arrows. If I expressly say unto the lad, behold, the arrows are on this side of thee, take them, thou shalt come, for there is peace to thee and no hurt, as the Lord liveth. But if I say thus unto the young man, behold, the arrows are beyond thee, go thy way, for the Lord hath sent thee away. And as touching the matter which thou and I have spoken of, behold, the Lord be between thee and me forever. I have an idea, that's a prayer that God answered, because I have an idea they're famous friends in heaven. I think David's going to be part of the millennial kingdom. The governor of Israel, or at least Jerusalem, will Jonathan be part of the administration? Well, it's not David's to give, but if I have an idea, he'll be handy to him if he can be. So David hid himself in the field. When the new moon was come, the king sat down to eat meat, and the king sat upon the seat as at other times, even upon a seat by the wall. And Jonathan rose, and Abner sat by Saul's side, and David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul spake not anything that day, for he thought, something hath befallen him. He's not clean. Surely he is not clean. Or maybe he's had enough of me trying to kill him. Does he not understand that he's losing grip of reality? If you invite me over to your house for dinner, and then you try to kill me, I might not answer the second dinner invitation in an affirmative fashion. I'm just saying, right? If you get really tired of me, ask me to leave. Don't try to kill me. Just something you might want to think about. But he's thinking, oh yeah, he's unclean, so he can't come to dinner. What is going on with this guy? It came to pass on the morrow, which was the second day of the month, that David's place was empty. And Saul said unto Jonathan the son, wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to meat, neither yesterday nor today? And Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, let me go, I pray thee, for our family hath a sacrifice in the city, and my brother, he hath commanded me to be there. And now if I have found favor in thy eyes, let me get away, I pray thee, and see my brethren. Therefore he cometh not unto the king's table. I don't think Jonathan lies well. You have to be kind of clever to lie well, and you kind of have to be, well, kind of a reprobate a little bit. And if you have so much integrity, and you're so integrous, and you're so honest, you don't lie well. I think that's the problem here. And I think his dad can see right through. Did you have kids that didn't lie well, and they're trying to get out from under trouble? And well, you know, the aliens come and they took me away, and I didn't have my cell phone on me, so I couldn't call you, and that's why I'm late. And okay, don't even start with me. You're grounded forever. Okay, I don't think boys are, our boys are pretty honest. When they messed up, they just own it. Remember, they were pretty good that way. I mean, they really were. But I don't think any one of them, I don't think they'd pull the wool over our eyes, because I don't think they were good liars. And I think this is the story here. If you can't lie well, that's probably a good thing, right? I will tell you this too. You're not clever enough to lie. I love you. You're very smart. If you lie, because I've done it before. Look, I got to remember who I lied to and what I said. And so I got it, because I got to keep the thing going now, and I can't unravel. I got to remember who said and who probably talked to who, and I can't remember all that, but I can generally remember the truth, the way things really happen. Just say that and go with that. And if it makes you look bad because you messed up, just own it. Just own it. We'll still love you. We promise, okay? It's easy to do that. It's easy to remember the truth. So Jonathan's lying for David, and it doesn't go well. Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, verse 30, and he said to him, "Thou son of the perverse and rebellious woman." That's your wife you're talking about, dude. I think Saul has a real dim view of women. You remember the Michal situation? And just I just don't think he's, I don't know. What do you say? He doesn't. "You're a son of a perverse and rebellious woman. Do not I know thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own confusion and unto the confusion of thy mother's nakedness?" Way, Dad. Let's leave Mom out of this, okay? And especially with her and with no clothes on. Just, don't I know you've chosen Jesse to... He's not confused at all. This is the problem. This is the nub of it, if you will. Who's confused? Saul. And when you're wrong, and you're wrong with God, and people who are right with God, you see them as, what's your problem? What do you got, something wrong in your head? You don't think right? No. They're the ones who are thinking right. Sin brings with it a certain madness, a certain crazy. We can't see things for the way they really are. No, Jonathan's not confused. He's a luminary to me in the Old Testament. He's saying no to the throne of self. Okay, Dad's messed up. I don't want to be king anyway. God's called my good friend. I'm gonna be right by his side. We're gonna fight the Lord's battles. They ain't gonna be a giant. They ain't gonna be a Philistine. There ain't gonna be anybody around. Me and my buddy Dave. Dave, you're the guy. You're the one God's calling. I can see that. It's evident to me. This is what Saul's life is supposed to look like. Instead, why are you perverse woman's mother, mother's name? Oh, my goodness. Dad, cool out. "For as long as the son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, thou shalt not be established, nor thy kingdom." What, Dad, what don't you understand about what Saul told, Samuel told you? You want to rehearse that again? You want me to call Samuel and have him retell you? "Wherefore now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die." Now, this is a crazy man, and it's all about pride. Pride. I don't want to be second fiddle to nobody. I don't want to, my family and my, God has already prophesied against him. What is Samuel suddenly a liar? It's just pride. God humbled him, got him naked, laying on the ground all night prophesying, and he still refuses to let go of what God says isn't yours anymore. It's a picture of Satan. Okay, who's the king of the world? Jesus Christ is. He's redeemed the world on himself. Now, he hasn't taken title. The title deed is given to us in chapter 5, 4 and 5 of the book of the Revelation, where Jesus starts to open the seals. He's the kinsman redeemer, and he's taking back what he has purchased. So who's on the throne now? A usurper. A crazy usurper. You say, Adam, I don't know, I'm not really comfortable when you're talking about Satan like that. I told you, sin causes cray-cray to happen. Look, I'm not saying he's not brilliant. I'm not saying he's not smarter than you and me and everyone we know, combined even. But don't tell me he's not insane. He thinks he's going to beat God. That's the definition of insanity in my book. Sin makes you crazy. Jonathan answered Saul. Jonathan, the sane one, answered the crazy one. His father said to him, "Wherefore shall he be slain? What has he done?" And Saul cast a javelin at him to smite him. So two verses early, he's trying to establish him as king, and two verses later, he's trying to kill him. Don't tell me he's sane. You're going to try to give me some reasons why you think this guy's okay in the head, and I'm thinking there's not a psychiatrist on his planet would give him a thumbs up. He has lost his mind. He's trying to kill. Boy, when he's got a javelin in his handy, it's not a pretty thing. Saul cast a javelin at him to smite him, whereby Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to slay David. What was your first clue there, Dick Tracy? I mean, I guess you can probably figure out, yeah, Jonathan, he's trying to kill me. I guess he's trying to kill David. So Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger, which, by the way, is the right emotion to have. Be angry and sin not, and don't let the sun go down on your anger. There's a time for righteous people to be angry. Jonathan's fiercely angry at his dad because he's sinning against David, his friend. This is tearing Jonathan, who's trying to be a good son, who's trying to be a good friend. When you have this strong, like, okay, I know a little bit about this, and I'm going to say this, but don't try to, like, cry for me or make, because I'm not saying it like that. I always wanted to be a devoted son to a mom who didn't want me to do this. And I had loyalty to God, and I had loyalty to my mom. And it was always, always friction. Well, I made my choice. You know, when you're trying to do what God's called you to do, and people who love you, when you love a lot, are trying to pull you in the other direction. What a heartache that is. For every one of us, we've all had that. I don't know if your family's saved, your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, all your friends, all your siblings, that would be a lovely world to live in, but it's never that way. And people who you love are on the outs, and it's always a tough thing. I want to be faithful to God. I want to be faithful to my friend Dave. Dad, you're making it real tough to, you know, no Father's Day card for you. That's all I'm saying, okay? That's twice now you try to kill me to death with that javelin, you know. Somebody take that away from him. Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger and did eat no meat the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had done him shame. Dad, you took an oath. And you treated me rather shamefully. I don't know if you had a dad who did something that made you, treated you shamefully. Probably happened to most guys, right? Let it go, forgive, forget. Forgive. It's the best way to go. Boy, it hurts. It hurts when it comes from someone who's supposed to be your. It came to pass in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field at the time appointed with David and the little lad with him. He said unto his lad, remember the whole prescribed, he said to the lad, run, find out now the arrows which I shoot. And as the lad ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. When the lad was come to the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan cried after the lad and said, is not the arrow beyond thee? So it's That's the secret message, right? And Jonathan cried after the lad, make speed, haste, stay not. And Jonathan's lad gathered up the arrows and came to his master. And the lad knew not anything, only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his artillery unto his lad and said unto him, go, carry them to the city. And as soon as the lad was gone, David rose out of a place toward the south and fell on his face to the ground and bowed himself three times. And they kissed one another and wept one with another until David exceeded. David cried more. they kissed one another. So that's sorted. No, it's just we went to Israel and nobody kissed me, okay? Which is kind of good. Except my wife, which is always kind of good. But it's a thing. They do that. It's not a little kiss on the cheek. It's a hospitality thing. It's not any, nothing nefarious. This is true friendship, true love. This is what friendship's supposed to look like. David is out one friend, very best friend. Is he going to replace him? You don't replace best friends. You might have somebody else you can hang out with, but this is just hurt. I'm hurting for David. David's been dead for thousands of years. It just tears my heart out of my chest. I understand what this is all about. And Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for as much as we have sworn, both of us, in the name of the Lord." Okay, Dad doesn't care anything about oaths, but I sure do. "We've both sworn in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed forever." And he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. Chapter 21. Then came David to Nob to Abimelech the priest, and Abimelech was afraid at the meeting of David and said to him, "Why art thou alone, no man with thee?" And David said unto Ahimelech the priest, "The king hath commanded me a business, and hath said unto me, let no man know anything of the business whereabout I send thee, and what I have commanded thee, and I have appointed my servants to such and such a place." David's pretty good at lying, and he's getting better. It's a chink in his armor, it definitely is. How about the truth, Dave? Okay, the king has gone off his nut. He's trying to kill me. Samuel's anointed me king, by the way, and I was playing for his, and he tried to pin me, and he got in the bed and the idol it's just a mess, I gotta tell you. Things are going pretty bad. Won't you pray for me? I'd really appreciate it. He's playing his deception card. And it causes, it rebounds in a very, very bad way. Now therefore, what is under thine hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread in my hand, or what there is present. The priest answered David and said, "There is no common bread under my hand, but there is hallowed bread, if the young men have kept themselves at least from women." What young men? He hadn't even seen them yet. Yeah, me and my boys, we're going to meet up later on. We get this top secret. I'd like to tell you what's going on in Ahimelech, but then I'd have to kill you. But this is the deal. And the priest answered David, "Yeah, I don't have common, this bread, but I got the hallowed bread, right? The 12 loaves that go on the table of showbread." And David answered the priest and said unto him, "Of a truth, women have been kept from us these 3 days since I came out, and the vessels of the young men are holy, and the bread is in a manner common, yea, there is, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel." People are saying, he's saying that because he's the king, and that bread is, nothing says it should be. I don't think he's saying that. He's saying, yeah, we could really use it, and the guys, they've kept themselves, well, maybe he has, but there is no guys. He's all by himself. He's on the run. So the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there but the showbread that was taken from before the Lord to put hot bread in the day when it was taken away. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chiefest of the herdmen that belonged to Saul. So he's head herdsman, okay? He's a shepherd, like David, and he's the head of all Saul's sheep. Doeg. I just think he should be killed just for having that name. It's horrible. And he's an Edomite. What is that? He's from Edom. Who else do we know in the New Testament from who's an Edomite? Herod. Now, the New Testament, glad you connected those dots. The New Testament word is Idumean, and just means Edomite. Herod's not Jewish? No. Edom is Esau, you know, Jacob's twin brother. It's his descendants. Nothing really good comes from Edom. It's a picture of just fleshliness. You remember, you know, it can be seen in the life of Esau. He sold his birthright for what? Porridge. It's nothing to me. I'm going to die anyway. I'm so hungry here. He never regarded spiritual things. His birthright, shmirthright. I get a bowl of lentils out of the deal. I'm fine. Really, it's the flesh. It's just, someone said every man has a price. What's funny is just how small the price is very often. I don't believe that, by the way. I don't believe that. But for some people, it's a, yeah, here's a bowl of beans. Oh, great. Here's my birthright. Esau, good going. David said unto Ahimelech, is not here under thy hand spear or sword? For I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste. Dave, you're really good at lying. He's just making his stuff up out of whole cloth. And the priest said, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If thou wilt, take that. Take it, for there is no other save that here. And David said, there is none like that. Give it me. And David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul, and went to Achish, the king of Gath. Gath is one of the cities of the Philistines. Achish is a king of the Philistines, one of the five lords of this five cities, five kings, and he's one of them. Dave, what are you doing? David, I understand. Intense pressure will make you do, listen, you're going to turn to God, or you're going to turn to your own wit and wisdom. God forbid that you should do that. God forbid that I should, because it's usually craziness, like going to my enemies and seeking refuge there. Going to the enemies of God. And the servants of Achish said to him, is this not this David, the king of the land? They understand the prophecy of Samuel better than Saul does. These are the enemies of God, and they're calling David the king. Did they not sing one to another of him and dance a saying, Saul hath slain his thousands and David his 10,000? Isn't that incredible? That song gets a lot of mileage on it. That was top 40 stuff for a long time, wasn't it? Even in the enemies of God, they know that little ditty. And David laid up these words in his heart and was sore afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. And why are you there, Dave? And he changed his behavior before them and feigned himself mad in their hands and scrabbled on the doors of the gate and let his spittle fall down upon his beard. Then said Achish unto the servants, lo, you see, this man is mad. Wherefore then have you brought him to me? Have I need of madmen? Hey, there's no madman shortage in my kingdom. I'll tell you that right now. I got plenty of them, right? Have I need of madmen that you've brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? And by the way, it's taught in some ancient cultures, people thought of crazy like holy, don't mess with it. He's God communing with him or something. So he's not a threat as far as Achish is concerned, and he's whatever, but he's not coming to my house. Why are you bringing him to me? Crazy guy. And he's scribbling on the doors of the gate. He's drooling all the time. That's the same beard that Samuel's oil was poured on his head and dripped down into his beard. Now it's spit on his beard. It's like, Dave, you're really kind of in a bad place, dude. And I wish I was there to kind of help him. We can talk about it. He gets right. Even when he's lying, even when he's, acting crazy when he's not crazy, he still loves and owns the Lord. He commits adultery. He has the wife, the husband of his adulterous affair, killed. He messes up royally, no pun intended, before his God, but it's always he maintains the same God. David is a flawed character. We love him because, you know, you see perfect people in Scripture, we have a hard time identifying them because none of us are perfect. When you see someone like David, he's out there, and our heart is drawn toward him. So we're going to stop there, except David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave Adullam, where his brethren and all his father's house heard it. I don't know how, right? They went down thither to him. He's finally in that place where God wants him. He's writing psalms. People are going to come to David. And everyone that was in distress, everyone that was in debt, everyone that was discontented gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them. And there were about 400 men. All the disillusioned come to him. All the disillusioned come to Christ. If you're still illusioned, you'll have no need for Jesus. And the world is full of illusions. Well, if I could just have a little more money, if I could just get that job, if I could just bowl a 300 string, if I could just get a hole in one, if I could just, and you always just, and success and happiness and everything is just that one. When you finally had it and said, there's nothing here, it's all there's nothing to the whole game. When you finally attain what you want and it's just like nothing, you're ready to serve Jesus Christ. He's in Adullam. He's writing psalms. He's reconnecting with God. He's not playing like a crazy guy anymore. Now, if you do a study of the psalms, it's a good thing if you did, you would read some of the things that are happening in David's life at this time. When did he write Psalm 34? You can turn there. We'll read that. We'll be done. A psalm of David when he changed his behavior before Abimelech, who drove him away and he departed. It's the same time that we're talking about. And now he's writing a psalm about this. Was it just after the fact? Is it still hot in his memory? Or is this a while after things have cooled down? But I remember that time. This is about that. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. By the way, my favorite psalm. It's my favorite psalm. And what occasioned it? Rather shady. So, take your shady activities and let God redeem what he can redeem. And, you know, I'm not saying, hey, you know, you should go out and sin up a storm. You really should. Then you'll know what redemption truly is. You know, you're sitting, oh, don't shake your head. You sin and sin and sin, because the one who's much forgiven is much, loves much. That's true. No, choose to sin, choose to suffer. We're gonna stick with that, right? But if you have sinned greatly and God has redeemed you, and you understand what redemption looks like. And I think this is David getting a picture. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continue to be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. Magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. He must have been teaching this to the guys in the cave. I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and he delivered me from all my fears. Can God deliver us from all our fears? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen, let me put it another way. Yeah. They looked unto him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. Oh, fear the Lord, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. Are we supposed to fear or not fear? David, make up your mind. You don't fear anything except God. And if you fear God the right way, you need not fear anything else. David has this. He's trying to share it with us. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. I say this, look, he gave us Jesus Christ. He's going to cheap out when it comes to a job or a automobile or what? He's not going to withhold any good thing from those who seek the Lord. Come ye children, hearken unto me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is he that desireth life and loveth many days that he may see good? Keep thy tongue from evil and thy lips from speaking guile. Oh, he would know that well, right? The priests are going to get killed. The whole community of priests, where he lied to Ahimelech, he would know that well. Keep your lips from speaking guile. Sometimes, listen, I'm getting smart at my old advanced age. I really am. Why? Because I learned from my mistakes, and it's hardly one I haven't made. True. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth and delivereth them out of all their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. You remember when the prophet comes to him, Nathan says, Dave, you messed up. You're the guy. And he tells him that story about the traveler. And the David proceeds, says, hey, you're that guy. And David instantly is broken before the Lord and of a really contrite heart. Many are the afflictions of the righteous. That's what I was saying earlier. But the Lord delivereth him out of them all. He keepeth all his bones. Not one of them is broken. A little prophecy tucked away about Jesus Christ, but he's promising us. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate. The Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate.